This is Lakia Hill, and you are listening to Rising CNY. I have an amazing guest with me here this evening. Yes, we're recording in the evening, our first evening podcast. Dr. Robert Simmons III of Micron Technology. Hello, Robert. How are you today?
Doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing pretty good. I'm so happy that we had this opportunity to finally connect. It's been a while of me trying to get you here and you showed up. And I think that's so important, is that you actually came through and kept your word. So I really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
So like I said to my listeners, you know, we're going to get to know a little bit about what you're doing with Micron. But I also think that it's really important that people who come through our community members and others, they get to really know who are these folks, who's the man behind all the work that's being done? You know, you came here and it's like your name just started shooting out all across everywhere. And I think it's important that, you know, it's just like, well, I'm more than just STEM.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to me. And so when I did a little digging, because that's what I love to do.
Okay.
And I found some things. So I'm going to let you just introduce yourself. And then I just have a couple of questions to ask. And let's just take it from there.
Yeah, Robert Simmons, happy to be here. Really enjoying Central New York, Syracuse. Y'all, weather in the winter is questionable, but the soul and the spirit of the community, I would say to folks, reminds me of a smaller version of Detroit, which is where I was raised, was born in Atlanta. The way in which people are so passionate about the city, so protective of the city, is something that mirrors Detroit. Detroit versus everybody is a real thing. Like, you know, we'll cut you if you start talking crazy about Detroit. Like, we keep it 100, like, say nice things about Detroit unless you from Detroit. Then you can criticize us, right?
Right. And okay. So so you are, when you said that, then you are definitely, you guys are definitely a lot like Syracuse for a lot of transplants.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
They experience that sentiment from natives here. Right. So,
So, you know, you got to stay a while before you can criticize. You know, I appreciate that. And, you know, as a head of social impact and STEM programs for Micron Technology and Micron Foundation, you know, lead all of our social impact philanthropy across North America, all of our STEM programming. The work that we do with STEM education is important to Micron, but it's also equally as important for me, for young people to have an opportunity to sit together collectively to think about their hopes and their dreams in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Whether it's with Micron or not, I just want young people to see STEM not only as a pathway, but as lessons that you can borrow from STEM courses that you can apply to if you want to be a great poet, if you want to be, you know, an architect, or you want to be a teacher, if you want to be an attorney, or if you want to run a grocery store, if you want to be an entrepreneur. There are things that you can learn from STEM experiences that are applicable to non-STEM careers. So I'm excited to be here and, you know, talk to you.
Right. I'm glad to have you. Actually, you touched on quite a few things that's going to tie in perfectly. So you said you were working with like OCC and some other schools, but it's not just here in Syracuse. You guys are, where are you? You're here in Onondaga County, you're in Oswego County, right?
And I mean, nationally, you know, we run STEM programs in Atlanta. Literally, we've done Girls Going Tech on the historic West End, and it was Black girl magic every day, all day. And for me, it's important to provide opportunities for young people who are underrepresented, pushed out of STEM, to have opportunities to engage in critical spaces, because it's a level of criticality that allows young people to let their brilliance shine in STEM. And so we run programs in Boise, Idaho, which is where Micron is headquartered.
Right.
And then we also, one of our first expansions of Chip Camp was ironically at Norfolk State University, which is a HBCU. So we were unapologetic about wanting to work with Norfolk State University. I'll be in Atlanta next week, not just to support Chip Camp, but we're partnering with UNCF on a summit that they're doing to have conversations about the role of HBCUs, which is even more critically important as we think about the latest decision from the Supreme Court on affirmative action. So it's really important for us to figure out ways to support people of color and those who are absent from STEM. And the last thing I'll say is that it's really important for people to understand that much of our work around STEM education, it's less important for people to have the technical expertise. And it is certainly important. Like, I don't want people to hear me saying, well, you don't need to have the technical expertise to work in a STEM career. What I'm saying is that what's equally important is for us to deal with STEM identity development, how you show up, how you experience the world. Are you comfortable in spaces and places where you may be the only person of color or the only woman or the only young lady, the only transgender person, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That work around STEM identity development is so important if we think about not just recruiting people who are underrepresented in STEM, but retaining them in STEM. And so for me, I'm really passionate about giving young people an opportunity to develop their own identity. STEM identity development runs in parallel, not perpendicular, to racial identity development, which people have written about over time, both from a theoretical and a practical space. And Du Bois talked about racial identity development, mm-hmm. you know, and so there are all sorts of people who have talked about racial identity development going back to the 20s. When I think about our work, identity development is just as important, because if you don't know who you are, and you're right. a whole person going into tech, you can have all the technical expertise you want, but it's not going to matter. Like you, right. you have to know who you are as a whole person so that you can kind of navigate a space and place.
Well, I always think about that too, when especially when it comes to on the developer end, right? Those who are building these algorithms and those who mm-hmm. are out there really thinking about like the design. So you hear a lot about human-centered design processes mm-hmm. that go into the development for technology, right? But before I go into that, I want to go back to something that you said. And first, just so that my listeners can really understand, you know, where you're coming from, I think it's really important that they know a little bit about who you are, because not only do you work for Micron, but you are also a scholar in residence mm-hmm. and a scholar of American praxis.
Anti-racist praxis.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that. It's because not all of us, including myself, especially with the anti-racism praxis, know what that is.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I am one of the rare people who left higher education as a tenured professor. I was the second African-American man to ever be a tenured professor at Loyola University. University of Maryland. And what I realized over time is that writing papers and journals that five people read just wasn't my jam anymore, right? Like I didn't go into higher ed to chase the carrot of being tenured and promoted. And some people do, and I'm not knocking it. Like mm-hmm. We need amazing scholars to do research about our communities and our communities and with our communities. That just wasn't my jam anymore. Like I had done that for 7 years and I just needed a change. And so I had an opportunity to go to DC Public Schools to work for Kaya Henderson as the chief of innovation and research.
Shout out to Kaya Henderson.
And it was a life-changing experience because I got to really understand the research that I was doing and in the real world. Mm-hmm. And as I kind of got further away from being in academia, I realized that I enjoyed teaching and I enjoyed my research. And the dean at American University invited me back in this particular role, which essentially is a visiting professorship. You know, one of the blessings of Micron is they allow me to maintain my visiting professorship at American mm-hmm. University. I teach a class, I do research, and keeps my mind fresh, right? Because I feel like the ability to sit and do critical analysis of, I don't know, Killer Mike's new album, or do critical mm-hmm. analysis of The Wire and its intersection with urban schools mm-hmm. provides me with fuel to continue to be a thinker and to think about the world and all of its complexities, because the world isn't neat and the world doesn't always make sense. And so through that role, I'm able to work with doctoral students because my role is housed in ed leadership and policy. And mm-hmm. so I enjoy my students and teach a class on anti-racism, teach courses on nonprofit leadership, and teach another course on educational leadership and policy. And right now, currently developing a course that looks at hip hop and social media in schools and its impact on education. Yeah, so really.
Right, I saw that actually using social media as a tool to also mobilize activists and building movements, et cetera,
which I
think is important.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, and social media is a tool. And if you think about the organizing that happened with Breonna Taylor's murder and the murder of George Floyd, a lot of that happened through social media. Like people knew where the meetup was through social media. And I think that, you know, social media as a tool of change, especially in the justice conditions and communities, is really important. And I think that it's a great way for educators to connect with their students through TikTok, Instagram, or whatever other platforms that are out there. Mm-hmm. It also helps us understand the ways in which information is power.
What do you think about technology besides not just social media, but what do you think about how developers should be using technology to kind of centralize humanity? And then what mm-hmm. does centralizing humanity or society mm-hmm. look like to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, tech is a tool. It's important for folks to have some guide rails as they think about the utility of tech, right? And so for me, I think about cell phones. I think cell phones are great tools to communicate with friends and families and apps and things like that. But they're also tools that people can use to send you, you know, negatively leaning content, right? And so it leaves you in this kind of strange place where you're just kind of looking at having to filter it out. And so I think that in my experience, there are pros and cons to tech. And I think, you know, generationally, you hear people talk about it, right? And, you know, whether it's in, you know, 70, 80-year-old folks are like, oh, that technology stuff has turned us into robots. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, kids spend all their time on iPads or, you know, whatever it is. But I also think that, you know, there's an opportunity for those that understand the utility of tech to leverage it for good. But the other reality of it is if you don't have a basic understanding of tech, the world is probably going to leave you behind. Like, it's just the reality.
I agree. You know, artificial intelligence, it's here. It's not going anywhere. We can't go backwards. So what do you think about that too?
Yeah, and how it's impacting, you know, again,
our future?
Yeah, I mean, I think that in my experience, Ruha Benjamin, who's a professor and a scholar, talks about AI and just the ways in which AI is only as good as the developers and those who are doing the input. So AI in and of itself isn't a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Now, there are those who are teachers who think it's a bad thing because, you know, you could use AI and maybe write a paper or something like that. But in and of itself, AI is not a bad thing. It's about the inputs to build it. Right. And like the infrastructure you put around it. And so for me, that's why I think the work that we do at Micron through our STEM education programs are so important. When we reach into communities that mm-hmm. are underrepresented in STEM fields, we need diverse voices. We need diverse experiences. We need diversity in tech to both hold us accountable. But the more diverse your talent pool is and the more diverse your team is, the more innovative and creative your solutions are to problems. And so I fully support those who want to engage with AI. My nephew is really into AI, but I'll admit I was a skeptic at first and mm-hmm. I still am on the fence. Like, yeah, I don't know about this thing. But as you said, it's here. It's not going away. And so it's like the people who, you know, complain about the internet and iPads. And you're like, well, guess what? I mean, iPads and the internet, and it's not going anywhere.
Right.
So you can either embrace it. Cell phones ain't going nowhere.
Right.
The cell phone in the bag ain't coming back. Your flip phone, I guess some people still have flip phones, but the cell phone in the bag ain't coming back. Right. Like, this is it.
Here's the thing, what I tell people, I say to them, it's technology. And like, to your point, there's no turning back. And what I was saying is no turning back, but it's also the turnaround of the development of it. It's one version today, and then tomorrow mm-hmm. it's going to be another version. So if you don't have the buy-in, it's really difficult for people mm-hmm. who already mm-hmm. do have the buy-in to keep up. So you have to really start thinking about, how are you going to adjust yourself in your life mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. this new wave and this new age mm-hmm. of technology? The future, I tell people, the future is here. Mm-hmm. It's like the future is here. All Back to the Future, what we used to talk about, what we used to see in the movies, all of that stuff is right here in our face. And it's been here longer than we've known. It's just that by the time it gets to us, we should know that it's been about 20 years or so mm-hmm. in the works before we were even able to get our mm-hmm. hands on mm-hmm. it. I want to go back because you mentioned diversity in tech, and I want to come back to Central New York. The fact that you've been all over North America mm-hmm. with this, working together with schools. When you think about our schools here, what is an area that, besides Detroit, I'm just talking about with schools, where are some areas that you've seen that are a lot like our Syracuse schools, however, they've been able to kind of move forward and which strategies were implemented or put in place mm-hmm. to watch those schools increase, like with graduation rates, mm-hmm. decrease absenteeism, decrease in suspensions. Have mm-hmm. you seen STEM impact areas like Syracuse schools? What areas were those and yeah. what strategies were implemented to accomplish that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that education is so nuanced and complicated, right? And I always say to folks that doing a kind of comparison to from one place to another is really difficult, right? Because context matters, right? And context mm-hmm. is context important. Matters. And I think that in my experience, in certain pockets of the District of Columbia, you'll find schools that are doing well. And I think there is a adult-centric approach to education that intersects with politics too much and like adult opinions that you'll find folks in like school districts, public school districts who don't want to learn from public charter schools as an example, because they get wrapped up in, you know, all the other kind of stuff around charters. And again, whether people agree with that or not is not my point. But the point of the matter is that good schools are good schools. How they came into existence is irrelevant for kids, but kids only go where their parents tell them to go. And so I think there's some amazing traditional public schools, some amazing charter schools doing great work. I always turn to Benjamin Banneker High School in DC as a great example of schools doing well with STEM, in particular in urban communities. And I think there's just an amazing story to be told. I think about places that are very similar to Syracuse. And I think you have to look at those pockets in communities because every place is different. And you know, there has to be a willingness to think outside of the box to mm-hmm. solve the current problems that exist. And, you know, and I always say to folks that when you think about the challenges of truancy, chronic absenteeism or literacy or whatever we're talking about, sometimes I often have to ask educators, as someone who started teaching in 97, is it that we don't have enough resources or is it that we don't have the will mm-hmm. to do something different? Because Jeffrey Duncan Andrade, who's a professor out at University of San Francisco, he's since relocated, I believe. He and another brother talked on a YouTube show and even in a book about urban schools. And the urban schools, and again, this is largely philosophical, right? So I don't want people to take it as, you know, I'm saying that urban schools aren't failing. And it'll track in a second. But they posited that urban schools actually aren't failing. They're actually delivering the outcome that they were designed to deliver, which is to deliver to corporate America a group of workers who can go to the plant and go to the factory and just be workers and not mm-hmm. thinkers, right? The question becomes, do we have the will to change? Do we have the will to do things differently?
Based on your experience mm-hmm. amongst leadership, mm-hmm. because all of this is guided by decision makers, mm-hmm. right? I would say more so, do we have the leadership in place and position to mm-hmm. actually make the difference?
I mean, I think the leaders are out there, but I think we need to redefine leadership, right? I mm-hmm. think we have this top-down understanding of leadership. I've been into plenty of schools where the teachers are leading the school and that the person who's the administrator is simply there to kind of protect the teachers so that they can actually do the leadership, or the person who's quote-unquote the school leader isn't actually leading, and that educators are doing great work in spite of this other person. So I think there actually are great leaders in communities, in particular in schools, but the question becomes, will we allow them to lead? And right now we're seeing an epidemic of people leaving the K-12 teaching mm-hmm. and education yep. profession because they don't feel like they have the protection and the tools that they need to do what needs to be done. And so you're seeing all sorts of teacher shortages and like all sorts of other challenges along the way that I think are just really problematic.
I know NYSET had talked about some years back that it was very difficult for them to recruit Black teachers mm-hmm. here in New York State. Mm-hmm. And then and just in general conversation, you know, just hanging out and just talking to people, when I talk to our peers is they don't mm-hmm. want to be teachers and they mm-hmm. give their reasons. I mean, I feel mm-hmm. like there's a power in marketing that doesn't happen and take place mm-hmm. that I just never understood why people don't address, mm-hmm. you know, like a push of recruitment for these things, or why aren't there like studies done to find out the why. There are formulas. There are things out here that can actually combat the disparities that we face, but they're just not happening. And I always go back to leadership. Mm-hmm. To me, I feel like there are good leaders out there, but they don't have any power. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things in place that no one wants to talk about that's really hard to talk about. Mm-hmm. But we need to talk about mm-hmm. something to your point earlier. It's not about us. It's mm-hmm. about the kids. And I feel like we've lost our focus on our young people. Mm-hmm. And we don't, and we don't listen to them either. Mm-hmm. When I'm speaking in general, but by the way, to mm-hmm. my listeners, because they can get a little testy. So, mm-hmm. you know, this is just a generalization. I know that there are people who are doing the work and doing the push and do listen to kids, but it's not enough, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know, and if you take the time to listen to our children, like I have Gen Zers in my house, 23 and 14. Mm-hmm. I talk to my kids all the time. That's how I get a lot of information. And it's what steers my thinking when I'm conducting research, because I listen to them or I hear them on the phone talking to their friends. And they're so different from us. Mm-hmm. They're so different from us. So if we're not connecting to them and we're not listening to them, when we're developing programs and coming up with solutions, we're not making a connection. They're not interested. Going back to that question about strategy, what's the strategy in place to diversify tech mm-hmm. in our schools or with our kids? What are some of those things? I know you have the CHIP camp, but what are some other things that you guys have in place or mm-hmm. that we could look forward to that you'll be doing to kind of help with that diversity?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is that we're very intentional about it, right? And I always say to folks that doing diversity, equity, and inclusion work in communities to solve particular problems requires a level of intentionality. Like it has to be important and you actually have to practice at it. And you have to, it has to be, mm-hmm. you know, like a muscle that you build, that you consistently train and retrain and strengthen. And through our work, through social impact and STEM education work, we have been very intentional about where we do programs, who we do them with. And so, you know, in the case here in Central New York, we've been very intentional about building relationships with the Onondaga Nation, right? But also understanding history of the ways in which the Onondaga people have been historically and systemically marginalized, and that the relationships have to be built on trust. At the same time, we realized that we wanted to build out a strategy to connect with communities in Atlanta, in particular communities of color. So that's why we were working to do work on the West End. But at the same time in tech, we need to think about both race, gender, and other ways mm-hmm. in which people identify, which is why we have Girls Going Tech. And so our goal is over the course of time is to provide more opportunities for young people and their families and communities and caregivers to participate in the type of programs that we do, to build out additional collaborations. And so I think about our collaborations with OCC, North Central Syracuse, and Liverpool, and the Museum of Science and Technology, the YMCA, and a variety of other organizations. We at Micron, in particular for our STEM education work, we can't do the work by ourselves. And we track data to look at the...
That's where I was going. Yeah, I was going to say, how are you going to...
Yeah, so we
track data. Track the impact.
On that, we do surveys of students and educators who participate in programs to help us better understand how things are working.
So what type of curriculum or programming are involved? Mm-hmm. Like what are the kids mm-hmm. getting when they're a part of these different programs?
Yeah, so CHIP Camp is designed to educate young people about semiconductors, but also helping embed in them a sense of hope and dreaming about STEM, right? Without a strong connection to STEM, you don't have a strong connection to semiconductors and memory, because, you know, that's a niche inside of STEM. And okay. So that's the first thing. We also like to ensure that young people see people who look like them. And so we actively, for Girls Going Tech in particular, we also try to ensure that there are a variety of women participating as mentors, engaging with the young people, because the only way to make change is through communication.
Okay, I just got a couple of more questions. We're going to close out soon. The violence rate is really, really high, obviously, as you mm-hmm. know here. Mm-hmm. What are some ways that you think that STEM helps combat violence mm-hmm. in those communities.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, building summer programs and programs to keep
giving
kids
them
off
something
the street,
to do,
something to do, is important. You know, that's something that we believe we can contribute to this community. Working with a broad cross section of partners to provide additional opportunities to young people, so that they actually have some place to go, providing them with jobs and internships and paid internships, because oftentimes young people want to be heard. Young people want jobs. And sometimes young people want jobs that will pay them a living wage, but they don't want to go to college. So like, what are the opportunities that exist at companies like Micron or other tech companies that don't require a college degree? Because you don't need a college degree to work in the tech sector, right?
Right.
And I think our partnership with OCC is really important. And shout out to Dr. Hilton and his staff at OCC.
Yes, yes, they're doing some good work.
Because they have been a strong partner of Micron since the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking forward to a lot of the ways in which we can show up together.
That's great. Now, how did you get so passionate about young people?
Yeah, I went to college and always wanted to be a teacher, because my 12th grade year, I had to do a senior service project. And my senior service project was at a Catholic school in Detroit. And at one point we had to teach. We were tutors probably from 8 to 12 or something until lunchtime. And I just fell in love with making a social impact through education, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, all I wanted to do was teach. Like, that was all I wanted to do. Like, I didn't go to college and say, well, maybe this or maybe that. Like, I knew that I wanted to go back to my community in Detroit and start my professional journey as a teacher.
Yeah, I love that. Now let me ask you what I ask everyone else before we leave. And this is like a sort of like a straight shooter. So I just wanted you to kind of like off the top of your head, just tell me what you think.
Yeah.
All right. What's your favorite fruit?
Cherries.
Your favorite drink?
El Presidente.
What do you do to support your leadership development?
Listen to podcasts.
What kind of podcast do you listen to?
I like to listen to Brian Windhorst and the NBA Hoop Collective, Jemele Hill and her podcast, and Mark Lamont Hill had a podcast. It's called Coffee and Books.
Right. Would you consider yourself unapologetically Black?
Unapologetically, yeah.
Always and forever?
Always and forever.
Wonderful. And the last thing I want to ask you also is that if there was one thing, I know it's not only one thing, but if there was one thing or could be the priority or the primary thing that you think would make all the difference in the world to humanity and bringing us together, what would that one thing be?
Just sitting and listening to people. And then the other one, I know you asked, is one thing, but the other thing is being willing to sit by yourself in silence. Just sit and just pause.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Robert Simmons III, for finally coming and taking the time. Absolutely. And I don't say finally in a sarcastic way. It's just that, you know, it's been a while. And I think that it happens when it's supposed to happen. And this has been an amazing podcast. I learned so much from you. And I'm sure my listeners will learn a lot, too. And we are so grateful for Micron. But we're even more grateful to have you here leading the charge and impacting our communities and our children.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And thank you guys for listening and tuning in to Rising CNY with Lakia Cahill. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you have any thoughts or ideas, please feel free to email me at Lakia@LakiaTechLLC.com with thoughts, ideas for podcast interviews and guests. Bye.